Thanks for joining us today at Liberty City Podcast. Liberty City values each person's unique experience with faith, and we hope that this word impacts you today.
You all look so good. I'm so intimidated because you guys are so good looking. First of all, I just want to thank you, honestly, for the opportunity, for the chance to, for me to be here. I don't take it for granted, and thank you. Something I really love about you guys is that you actually walk the talk. You are real, and you are really like Jesus, so thank you for that. We really look to you guys as an example, so thank you. Why don't we give God a hand for them, for the incredible pastors that we have. Well, are you guys ready for this? I'm Mexican and like people yelling and talking back to me, so I hope you're ready for this. I hope you're ready. Levi said, and I need to stay behind the mic, the speakers apparently, but so we've been married for 7 years. January, it's our anniversary. We're going to be married for 7 years. If you don't know that, it's amazing. Being married is the greatest thing ever. My wife's name is Morgan, and we have two beautiful girls. The little one's name is Olivia. She's almost two. She's amazing. The big one, her name is Neva Winter, because we love winter, because we lived in Mexico. So she's great. She's going to be five. She's this little grown-up. It's crazy. We love her. And we met in Australia. It was great. We also met Chris in Australia. We were housemates. It was horribly awesome. And I don't know what that means, but it's all good. I'm really excited to be here. And honestly, I just want to tell you a little bit of us, because we don't know. If I haven't had the pleasure to meet you personally, my name is Luisa. And honestly, when we first met, when we first got married, we did what every new wed wanted to do. Like the dream of every person that just got married, we did exactly that. And that's, we lived in my parents' house. You know, that's like the dream, not, and it was horrible. It wasn't horrible. Probably they're watching I Love You, like mom and dad. They don't understand English, so it doesn't really matter. But it was horrible. It was like this experience of like, I was living in Australia. Morgan didn't speak any Spanish, and we were married. We got married, and then we moved to my parents. This is a long story, but we end up living in my parents' house, and it was just horrible. At the start of our marriage, it was like very interesting. It was like, it's a nice word to use, right? It's interesting. And then we moved to Morelia, which is like this little Mexican town, which is a million people. It's little in Mexico, it's big in Canada, but we moved there, and we had nothing. We literally had a bed, we had a fridge, and that was it. And that was all that we needed. And we had a dog. His name is Charlie. It's Charlie because we had to give him away. And this dog, he was like the miracle dog because he coped our transition through one city to another city by chewing electrical cords. He would literally like get on the wall and put his face on the socket and like start like biting and stuff. And he's alive. I don't know how. He's a miracle dog. But in our very rocky start, we did something great, and I have a picture of that on the screen, and it's this book that we bought, and it's basically our origins. We wrote a couple of things, and if you wanna put it in there, the next picture is like a few things that are non-negotiables for us. It's things that we don't want to lose sight of, and it's basically like our values. It's the origins of our marriage, the origins, the culture of our family, and it's very simple things like think outside the box, family first, church work is second, train people, blah, 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 and things that are like interesting. You can take that off because it's embarrassing. But that's the origin. And I think, honestly, it's so important that we remember the origins of who we are, right? Because it's so easy for us to, like, miss the plot. It's so easy for us to forget why we started doing things in the first place. We never fight, Morgan and I. We never fight. But when we do fight, I often come to this book, and I remember why we got married, and like how our family is meant to be, and like how the origins of who we are. And I go back to this book, and it's the origins of who we are. And maybe you've been in life and you've forgotten the origins of what you're doing, Maybe you are an architect, and maybe you started as an origin. You wanted to build these self-sustainable houses that were amazing, but now you kind of missed the point, and you're like, it's all about low cost and high revenue, basically. And or maybe you are, I wrote a bunch of things here, maybe you're a sibling, and you remember like the origins is like you're playing with your sister or with your brother and these massively awesome times. And like honestly, when we're grown-ups, I only remember playing with my siblings, and it's great. I don't remember fighting a lot. It was fighting, but it was like a good kind of fight, you know? Like, but then you miss the plot, you forget the origins, and then you come to this place with your siblings that you don't talk. Like you actually have this like you're fighting with them. Like I wrote the word because I forget. Like you're basically like you have resentment to your siblings, right? Like because you forgot the origins. Maybe you're a lawyer and first you started with justice. You wanted to bring justice to the city, but now you're all about outrageous wealth. Maybe you have an unwanted job. Maybe you are doing something that you never wanted to do, but you're paying the bills. And that's the origins. That's why you got a job in the first place, right? You wanted to pay the bills for your family. But now you missed the plot, and now it's all about complaining about that job, right? And we all forget why we started doing things in the first place. And I think in a walk with God is like that, right? I think the busyness of life and just like life in general and things happen that we forget the origins of our story as a faith community. We forget where it all started. And this creates a massive impact in our daily lives. It creates something that puts conflict between our normal life, our real life, and our spirituality, right? And we're talking about like living a life, a Christian life 24/7, living Christianity outside Elgin and Lisgard, right? And we've been talking about this. And I think when we miss the plot, when we miss the origin of what we're all about, it creates this conflict. And the only thing I can think of is a fight that we had, Morgan and I, a long time ago. And we hardly fight. Don't worry about it, guys. We're good. But a long time ago, I remember it was last week. I'm just kidding. It was a long time ago. But we had this argument. It wasn't a fight. It was just an argument. And Morgan was explaining to me how she thinks is more like a string. It's more like this string that like goes around everything in their life and how like everything is connected. Everything is one. It's one life. And I was explaining, yeah, that's cool, but I don't think like that. My life is a box. Like I have put things here, work, it's a box. Then I have my spiritual life as a box. Then I have my hobbies as a box. Then I have this as a box. And I was explaining to her, like, everything is a box. And I think sometimes our Christian life can be like that. And when we miss the origin, that can happen so easily that we put our lives as boxes and we compartmentalize things in our lives and it creates conflict with our life. It's simple. When you have your life as boxes, you have to put one box before the other, right? So when you're trying to decide something, you have your Christian box, super awesome, super pretty, it's like a nice box, but then you have your job box. Well, you have to choose sometimes to put your job box first, right? And it's just life. We have to do that. And then this creates people that get frustrated. Have you ever met a guy or a girl that it was on fire for God? Like she was like, no, they were like absolutely on fire. They loved God with everything they did. And at the beginning, everything was very dreamy. Everything was very awesome. Everything was like incredible. And they started reading their Bibles. They started going to church. They started joining a connect group or like a small group, a small community. They started reading the Bible, whatever. They did the whole devotional thing. They were great. But then as time went by, life went on. And things got a bit complicated. And then you see the same person is like hates church. It's like very far away from God. And I feel like when we forget our origins, that's what happens. We clash. We create this conflict in our heads, in our minds, that our lives is separated. It's compartmentalized. Are you guys there? And it's crazy. So I think we need to learn our origins. Is that right? I want to take you to a journey. Last week I talked a little bit about that, but I just want to talk about this, like the origins of our faith. What, who are we? And that is going to create, hopefully, a solution to this problem, okay? So it all started in the beginning, obviously. Last week I talked about it a little bit, and God created this beautiful place. God created this beautiful garden, and this place was called Eden, and Eden means delightful. The word Eden means a delightful place, which is amazing. But God had so much authority that he created everything out of nothing, right? He had so much authority that he created a perfect place. And when the authors are talking about this perfect place, this Eden place, this garden-like place, they're talking about it is perfect. And God said it was good. And this word good, sometimes it's translated as perfect, means that it's full with all the raw material. It's filled with potential, if you want. It's filled with so much stuff that is ready for people to take. Now, I want to give you a little bit of context about this. When people were reading this for the first time, when people were listening to this for the first time, most likely they were under a king or a queen. Most likely they were being subdued by some emperor or some force. So when people were reading this story, or they were hearing this story about the creation and God and how this God called Yahweh was like coming and creating everything, most likely they were under a king, someone in authority. So the next verse that I'm going to read was an absolute shock for them. It was like, what are you talking about? And you need to have this in mind. It's in Genesis 1, verse 27 to 28, and I think it's going to come on the screens. Yes. So it says, so God created humankind in his image. Now the word image there, it's a very interesting one. So kings and queens will usually create images of themselves, right? They will create these the statues of themselves. So people will see that it represented who was in authority, who was in power. So when they were reading this, they were like, what are you talking about? Only kings and queens are able to have an image. And then it continues and says, in the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them. And then we can keep going. And they said, God blessed them. And God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the air and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and over every living thing that moves upon the earth. So when the people that were first hearing this, it was an absolute shock to them because they were thinking like, okay, hold on a minute. No, this can't be us. We don't have authority. We don't have any of that. So basically, it was a shock because God was saying, yes, humans are created in the image of this God. It's like when you have a baby or a friend of yours has a baby or something and you go visit them and it's this little creature that is just sitting there doing nothing. And you're like, he looks like someone. And you can't really figure out who she or he looks like, right? It's like, he looks a little bit like the mom, or he looks a little bit the mom. Hopefully, the baby looks more like the mom than the dad. Sometimes it's not like that, but for things, we're going to pray for the babies. It's like that. God created something that was similar to him. God created something similar to God. And basically, it's because God wanted a family. And this is the whole concept. This is the whole idea of God creating everything. God created everything. It was so delightful. It was such a wonderful place because he wanted a family. He wanted somebody to do family with, to spend time with. So he created someone that looked like him, something that had this likeness, this character. And what he does is that he gives these two things. He says to rule and to subdue. Now we have a different context about that, right? Right now, we don't see it as something good. We see it as something usually bad. But the first part of that is that, well, it says that fill the air and multiply it. We don't have an issue with that. It's like humans don't have an issue with keeping their pants off. So we got that covered. But then it says subdue it and rule it. And this idea of subdue it and rule it is very interesting. It's really like awesome to me. And it's the origins of who we are. So basically what it says is the word rule is no longer that was something for the elite. Before it was only the kings were able to rule. So when the people were listening to this, they were like, oh my gosh, so you're telling me that the creator God that had so much authority created me in his image, and not only he created in his image, I'm creating his image, but now I can have a little bit of ruling power? So that was like a shock, and that was like very cool at the same time. But then, so they were created to rule, and then subdue, which the word subdue basically means to work the earth and move it forward, to move the raw potential, the raw materials of the earth, and make them somehow act like acomodarlos, which basically means like to have, what would you say that? To arrange them in such a way that you would just move forward. So basically, what I'm trying to say is this. God created humans in his image, which is crazy. He gave them authority. He gave them the power to rule. He gave them the power to subdue. So what does that mean? Well, that means that Adam was a gardener. He was a gardener. In Genesis 2:15, this is what it says. This is so cool. I'm such a nerd, but this is so cool. It says, the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to till it and keep it. Other translations say to work it. So basically, God said to Adam, you know what? You need to work in the garden. And we usually have this idea of Eden as this place that we're literally poking our eyes, like scratching our bellies, having margaritas because they're from heaven, or whatever, like just doing nothing, right? Just like enjoying life. But the reality is that God put Adam in this space to work it. And it was great, because then this place that was full with raw potential was put Adam in it, and even they were there, and they were made to be gardeners. And I could make some jokes about it because I'm Mexican, but I'm not. But he said to subdue it, subdue the garden, that it will produce then, in time, the garden, he will subdue it, he will rule it, and it will produce a community, right? Because they will multiply, hello? And then they will have those communities will become cities and so on and so forth. And so from the beginning, we can see that God wanted to partner with us. From the origin of creation, the basics of the story is that God wanted to partner with us. He wanted to use our hands, our feet, to expand his kingdom. But then Genesis 3 came. And we talked about it a little bit last week, and it's when sin came into this world. And basically what sin was this. It posted the question to humans, do you want the good of God, or do you want the good of yourself? Do you want to define good as the definition of God, which was serve others and basically show love to others? Or do you want to define good yourself, which meant a completely different thing? And then humans at that point, they chose this part, which was basically our own good. And then we see how sin entered the world, and in between, basically, we did what we were meant to be doing, which meant that as humans, we built cities, right? And we see this story in the Bible of Babel. Is that how you say it? And how it's completely opposite to God's desire. And then because we were going in a different direction, God did something. And then we see how creation keeps moving forward. We keep doing what we were meant to be, ruling up, subduing, but we were doing it in a way that was only for ourselves. It was for our own benefit. Are you guys okay?
Yeah.
I'm glad you're understanding my accent. I sometimes don't even understand myself. It's great. So we had a big problem, right? We had a big problem here. Like God wanted something, but it was completely different. So what was the big solution to this? And obviously it was Jesus. Hashtag classic. But how is this a solution? And I'm going to get somewhere, but how is this a solution? Well, the first thing that you need to know is that God loved creation so much. God loved humans so much. He loved his family. So in order for humans to be worthy again of having this relationship, God sent himself in the form of a human. Jesus came as a human baby. And that alone restore the value of humanity. Like, talk about commitment problems. Like, God didn't have a commitment problem. Like, he wasn't a human at some point, but then he came to this world a long time ago as a human in human form. He was completely bounded and committed to humanity. He wanted us so bad. He wanted a family so bad that he took flesh and form, and he was this human walking on earth. So his birth alone gives value to humanity. then his life was amazing. And through the last weeks, people have been talking about the life and how he's been, how Jesus was growing in stature with men and God. But his life was a full life. There was fullness in him. A delight, I'm sure it was a delight to spend time with him. So if the light, which is really crazy, if God was so delightful to spend time with, that means that Eden was walking on earth. That the Garden of Eden was alive and in the form of Jesus. And Jesus was full of life and he was walking around and he was the perfect example of us. He was perfect example of how we're meant to rule. And you see in the stories of the Bible how he's ruling the oceans and he's telling the oceans to be quiet and to stop the storm. And you see in the stories of the Bible how he's saying, you know what, like sickness go away. And he had so much authority and he did so much stuff, like perfect example of the perfect human. And I'm sure if you were to ask him, how's your spiritual life? Jesus would have said, what? My what? Like if you were to ask Jesus, if you were in that time and you were like with him and you were like, hey, how's your spiritual life, Jesus? He would be like, what are you talking about? Like why spiritual life? Because at some point we missed the plot and we divided our lives into these boxes. When it was never meant to be on boxes, it was meant to be one unified thing. So his life was great. He would probably say, what are you talking about, bro? And then his death. So his birth was great. He gave value to humanity. His life was an example. He fulfilled all the law, the ceremonial, the civil, the civic, whatever part of the law, he fulfilled it. He was the perfect human. Some scholars, some people that are way more smart than I am, he said like he was the second Adam. He was this human that was the prototype again of humanity. He was like what humans were always meant to look like. And then his death. He defeated sin through death. Through his death, he defeated. He bridged the gap that sin made between humans and God and restored the possibility to see again in this mirror. Because that's what the image of God is. Let me just back, how do you say that? Go back in a bit. And basically, what that means is that the image of God, listen, the image of God, it was basic. If you want to put it as an analogy, it's like this mirror. If we were created as an image of God, we were mirrors. Mirrors that would see God, and at the same time that we're looking at him, looking at his beauty, his glory, whatever, we will reflect that through our lives. But seeing what happened is like it put a veil on that. He put a veil on that mirror so we weren't able to see. And we see in Matthew 27:51 that when the death of Jesus, when he took a breath for his last time, that works. Thank you. This is what it says in the Bible. At that moment, the curtain of the temple was torn in two. From the top to the bottom, the earth shook and the rocks were split. What that means is the veil was torn. The possibility of us going to God was back again. There was like hope in that moment. There was hope for the mirror to be seen again. And then what happens? The most beautiful, like everything is great about Jesus' life, right? Like everything is great about his birth. It's like, whoa, like from a virgin. That's awesome. I mean, never happens. Then his life, it's like, some people say that it happens, but it doesn't happen. And then his life was like exemplary. It was this amazing life. It was like this prototype of what humans are always meant to look like. His death, well, it bridged the gap. It was amazing. But the cream of the top, I don't know how you say it, like the cherry on top of the cake, it was his resurrection. Like when I was writing this, like I was like so moved by the thought of the resurrection. And I wrote this. As Jesus laid in that tomb, on the ground, he was being planted like a seed in a field. A seed that had to die first, but that from within, life was coming out. A life more beautiful and more abundant than we've ever seen before. So when the stone that was in that tomb was rolled away, life came out of it like a beautiful flower that emerges from the ground. And the original plan was back in motion. And that is what the good news is all about. That's the gospel. And that's so amazing that God loved us so much. And he had a plan for us to partner with us so we can move his creation, his garden-like city, like his this beautiful place, delightful place, that he would be so so close to us, that he would partner with us. And then we messed up, and then he was still so committed that he brought the plan back to action. I love this passage. It's in John 20, 11 to 16, and we're going to read it because it just brings the whole story into us a full circle. Mary arrived back at the tomb, broken and sobbing. She stopped to peer inside, and through her tears, she saw two angels in dazzling white robes sitting where Jesus' body had been laid, one at the head and one at the feet. "Dear woman, why are you crying?" they asked. Mary answered, "They have taken away my Lord, and I don't know where they have laid him." Then she turned around to leave, and there was Jesus standing in front of her, but she didn't realize that was him. Then check this out. He said to her, "Dear woman, why are you crying? Who are you looking for?" Mary answered, thinking he was only the gardener. Remember that God put Adam in there to work the field as a gardener. He was the first Adam. He was the first human that was supposed to take this partnership with God forward, but then we messed up massively, and then he sent Jesus, and then Mary confuses him as a gardener. I think it's so, like, the authors of this gospel, they're like trying to like make you look back and realize, hey, this is what it's all about. And then he's a gardener, and "Sir, if you have taken his body somewhere else, tell me and I will go." And Mary, Jesus interrupted her, turning to face him, she said, "My teacher." And this is so amazing. And like literally in a summary, this is what I'm trying to say. God wanted a family he could spend time eternity with. God longed for a family that he could spend time with. Then he will partner with them to create a delightful place, working together to make something beautiful. Then sin came into the world and stole part of our identity. But Jesus came and brought the original plan into action. What does that mean for us? Now, this is cool. This is very, very nerdy, very whatever you want to call it. I love it, but it's very out in the air. So Morgan always tells me, okay, bring it back. How can I live this? What does this mean for us? That means that Jesus came to tell us there are little boxes that we have created, that this compartmentalization of our life, is that a word? I don't even know if that's a word. Good. I thought I created a word, whatever. That means that Jesus came and Jesus came to tell us there are little boxes that sin and this disordered view of Christianity made are no longer needed. Jesus came to give us a larger life, a freer life that encompasses all of our boxes. So now, once again, we take our hobbies, our vocation, our dreams, and our family and merge them into a 24/7 Christianity. Maybe you're not going to remember everything or anything I've said. Maybe you didn't understand again anything I said. But if you can remember one thing, if you can go home and spend your week remembering what this Mexican said, would be this thing. Break the box. It will be this one thing. Break the box. If you're taking notes, you have to write this down. Break the boxes. We have created so many boxes in our life. We have separated our life into these different things. And we think about work as this completely different thing than our spirituality. We think of our family. I'm going to rule my family. We think of our finances. God, don't mess with my finances, you know? I don't want to give the 10%. This is my money. And we put boxes into different things. But God wants to free you. He wants to encompass you. And he wants you to break the boxes. 2 years ago, Morgan and I started feeling very weird in the place that we were. We were living in Mexico. We were doing these great things in an amazing church, incredible church, where Chris actually went and visited and said a bad word to the pastor because that was the only thing that I taught him. So it's not your fault. It was my fault. It was fun. What was I saying? We were in this church, and 2 years ago, Morgan and I started feeling like something was off. Have you ever felt like like you're in life and you feel like you're uncomfortable where you are. You feel like you don't belong in that place. Like something was happening with us. We didn't know what it was. I thought that it was some of my insecurities that I had to deal with. We thought all these things, but then we had to have this conversation with our senior pastor. And I went with him and we sat down and I told him, hey, I feel like I don't belong here. I feel like I'm not part of the family. I feel like we're so different to everything that is here. Like, I don't feel like we're part of it. And what they said, it was what every good pastor would say that would annoy you the heck out of you. It was, hey, just plant yourself more. Which was so offensive for us because we were there for 5 years at the time, and we were like, we moved countries, we moved cities. Morgan didn't speak Spanish. She learned to speak Spanish, by the way, she's fluent. And literally, yeah, I clap to my wife. I was so deeply offended by that comment. But we did that. We were obedient and we did that. And that year was the best year of our lives. We had friendships. We built friendships that, we miss them so much. We start serving with a different attitude at church. We start doing stuff different, right? Like there was a complete shift. But after a year and a half gone by, we still feeling like that. We were feeling like that, and we were making these huge conferences where people from all around the world were coming. And it was like in 2018, like in the middle of the conference, we just heard both of us separately, like, it's time for you to take the next step. And I don't know what time is it. Oh. In Jesus' name, amen. We're finished. I'm just kidding. And it was 2018, and we felt like that. We felt like God wanted us to take the next step. Have you ever felt that? Oh, man, it's a scary thing. It is a scary thing. You guys wouldn't know that. It's a scary thing. And then our question, my fear straight away was, what the heck am I going to do? I've only done church my entire adult life. I've never had a job outside church. What am I going to do? And I had to wrestle with it, this idea of, like, how am I going to serve God? Like, I've been preaching around, I've been going around, like, I've been building teams, I've been doing the church thing. I was a professional Christian. Working for church. And now, like, what the heck am I going to do? And literally kept me up at night. And it like, I was, like, tearing up because I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. Then fast forward a couple of months, and we are now in Canada. Another story, but we are now in Canada, and I'm working to get my permanent residency through the spousal blah, 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 which is great. Yay. But I'm not able to work right now. So I've been having to deal with this idea a lot. Like, if I've always meant to partner with God to move His creation forward, what does that mean? How the heck am I going to break the boxes if I don't have any boxes? Or what the boxes that I have, how am I going to break them? And this is a practical thing that I've been doing. And if Andy can come and play some John Mayer to make me sound more spiritual, that would be great. So they think that what I'm saying is actually true. Thanks, Andy. But this is what I've been doing. Three practical things that I've been doing to break my box. And maybe they will help you to decompartmentalize your life, to understand that God doesn't want you to have boxes. This is what I've been doing. And the first thing is live your life. Live your life. What does that mean? Enjoy. Enjoy your life. Look for God in the ordinary. Look for God as you wash dishes. Praise Him. As you take care of your kids. As you work. As you walk. Have you ever had this incredible meal in your life? That it's like you're sitting in a restaurant with the people you love. With friends and family. And obviously it's a Mexican restaurant because where else, obviously? Right? Right? I don't hear you guys. Right? And then time stops as you take a bite of this amazing taco. Because this is a spiritual thing. And I'm going to tell you why this is a spiritual thing. And then you have this bite. And it's like this weight comes upon you. You have felt it, right? I'm not crazy. And you, like, you, it's just all the flavors exploding in your mouth, and it's like this moment of weight. You feel full. And it was just one taco, but you feel full. Or maybe you're sitting on the new train. Yay. Has anybody taken the train? I've taken it like 50 times already. It's awesome. And you're sitting on the train. You're listening to something on your headphones. And as you listen to something on your headphones, there's this one part of the song. Whatever part of the song, whatever the kind of song, instrumental, classical, hip-hop, whatever you want to listen to. Mexican music, why not? And then this one verse, this one part, this one melody, this one tone, this one single part of the song that you're listening to, and there's this weight comes upon you. Like this, 15 seconds, rewind. And you're just listening to this, and it's great. Has that ever happened to you? Or maybe you love architecture and interior design or something like that, and you're just like, you see Pinterest. Anybody looks at Pinterest and is like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And you hate it, but you love it at the same time. And it's great. But then there's something different when you walk into this room, which is perfectly organized, this like beautifully designed. And then you see this piece of furniture that is amazing. And then this weight comes upon you. No? Has anybody? I'm not crazy. I know I'm not crazy. I remember you're at church and then this guy is preaching, and there's one thing that this person is saying, and it just captivates you. And it's just like, I'm not gonna remember anything that person is saying, but this one thing that he said, I will remember. And it's like this weight comes upon you. There's this word in Hebrew. I don't speak Hebrew, but people do, and I read people that do. And it's the word kavod. And this word kavod, it means the glory of God. Now, the definition of the glory of God is weight. And this is the cool thing that I'm feeling right now, is this weight in this place. The glory of God, it can be found in the ordinary, in the extraordinary, in the natural, in the supernatural, at work, in your family, in the boat, in your office, as you're typing. Wherever you are, it can be found. The glory of God. Just live your life. Enjoy those moments. And then not only live your life, but live your life well. Live your life well, man. Live it well. There's this long quote that I love. It's from José María Escriba. Power. And this is what he says. Don't doubt it, my children. Any attempt to escape from the noble reality of your daily life is, for you men and women of the world and outside the world, something opposed to the will of God. On the contrary, you must realize now more clearly than ever that God is calling you to serve Him in and from the ordinary, secular, and civil activities of human life. He waits for us every day in the lab, in the operating theater, in the army barracks, in the university chair, in the factory, in the workshop, in the fields, in home, and in all immense panorama of work. Understand this well. There is something holy, something divine, hidden in the most ordinary situations, and it is up to each one of you to discover it. It is time for us to spiritualize what we thought it was secular. Not to be weird, guys, honestly. You know, like you're at work and you want to spiritualize your work and you're like, let's not be weird. He does that. But then let's not be weird about it. But it's time for us to bring back what we were always meant to be. We were always meant to be spiritual beings doing everything and anything and partnering with God to that, which means be the best you. You don't have to be the best at what you do. You just need to be the best you. You just need to be doing the best that you can. If you're in sales, sell the heck out of that company. You know, like sell the best that you can. If you're a stay-home dad like me, anybody? Just me? Yeah. Just do it the best that you can. If you're a teacher, man, think of great ideas for you to teach like nobody has ever taught before. Like be the best you that you can. And finally, the last thing that I've done to kind of put my boxes apart and just break them is just to be real. Just to be real. What does that mean? It means to be a representative. It means to live in a way that whatever you do tells the story of God. The realest you is not what society, what culture, what your mom, what your dad says, though sometimes they, most of them, often they say good things about you, but sometimes they don't. It's not what your friends tell you, it's what God tells you. And the origins, where you want to go back to, is like you were always meant to be this person that was partnering with God to move creation forward. You were meant to rule. Let's bring that back. You rule, man. And I just want to finish with this quote, and then I want to pray. I believe in Christianity as I believe that the sun has risen, not only because I see it, but because by it, I see everything else. Why don't you close your eyes?
We're so glad you joined us at Liberty City Podcast. Please check us out on social media and find an event to connect with us.